Winter. Winter has come. And yeah, no, Game of Thrones is coming. Yay!
We are not sponsored by Game of Thrones.
Oh, God, no. Not HBO. But no. If HBO would love to sponsor us, that would be nice.
Yeah, we'll take anyone's money. Really?
We sound cheap. We're not really cheap.
No, no, no. No, no. We expect to be well complicated, well compensated for any ads. Complicated.
Well complicated.
Well complicated, compensated, and complicated, which I think was the first word I said. Oh, boy.
You're a strange one tonight.
I probably am. I'm very tired.
Are you?
Yes.
Yeah. It's been one of those lovely, warm, yet cold days. It's love this time. Yeah. Yay.
Gets cold nice and fast in the evening.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
That may or may not have an impact on what we're going to tell you guys tonight.
You just wait till we do the proper intro and you'll find out. So yes. It's all good. So, I think that's enough waffle.
Waffle. I love waffles. Waffles. Oh, waffles.
Ooh, those warm waffles. Yeah. Oh, dear.
With ice cream. And maple syrup.
Yes.
The proper Canadian stuff, too.
This is not helping me stay focused on what we're meant to be doing. So, let's get to it.
Hey!
What the?
History. History. History.
Hello and welcome to What the History, your fortnightly tidbit of yummy stuff that's history-based. How's that? Yay,
that's good.
Me!
That's good. Susie did the intro.
That's the first time I've done the intro, everyone. Yay me! Because Trevor was laughing too much, so I had to take over. It's like one of those quick decisions.
Because you started laughing.
Oh, I always started laughing at the end.
Well, since you introed, you should intro yourself first.
Hello, I'm Susie Holland, and this is...
Trevor Holland.
And tonight, this afternoon / evening, we've got some lovely little stories to bring you that made us say what the history, indeed, that are based around winter, because in Australia, yes, hello to everyone overseas, woohoo, it is winter, yay, we're into the fourth day of winter here.
We are.
Great. At time of recording. 5:01 p.m.
Very specific.
I know. So. That's the kind of person I am. I'm specific. See, I can say specific and not say Pacific. Yeah, okay, yeah. Stop.
Oh, good.
Susie.
So what a wintry tale do you have for us, Susie?
Oh, fireside chats. Oh, you know, Franklin D. Roosevelt did this.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did these little fireside chats and got everyone involved. Anyway, stop. Okay, wrong part of history. Okay, now my story's on something that happened in England. Okay, but I'll start by saying resilience and enterprising. The English have a history of turning tragedy into triumph, turning adversity into adventures to keep themselves and others entertained and safe. And who hasn't heard of the tradition of the English to keep calm and carry on? Yay! This attitude has saved and helped the English through many a scary situation, such as the Blitz from September 1940 to May 1941. That's just one example. Another, though not so scary, enterprise was the Frost Fairs in London. Now, I was inspired to research these after a recent Doctor Who episode, Hi, Fellow Whovians, which was called Thin Ice, where the Doctor and Bill, played by Peter Capaldi and Pearl Mackey, respectively, I have to put that there, respectively, end up at a frost fair complete with an elephant walking across the ice on the Thames. I wanted to research these to see if they actually happened, and to my surprise, they did. Which I was just going, oh my god, it was based on a real thing in history. Yay, I like those episodes.
Except anyway, for the giant fish.
Except for the giant fish. Mm. Yeah, that's not real. Okay, guys, I'm sorry to say the giant fish under the Thames, eating people and pooing.
I don't think we...
That's a bit too graphic, yeah, but okay, let's just say the giant fish and his little fish friends did not exist. Winters are cold, and so I have heard, really, really cold in London. So I haven't experienced one yet, but I will. Every year brought the risk of starvation, famine and death, but Londoners, being Londoners, decided to make the best of a bad situation, and in the freezing winter of 1607 to 1608, the first ever frost fair was held. For a frost fair to occur, you need a place to hold it. But this wasn't held on land. Oh, no, no. It was held on the frozen River Thames. Now, between 1607 and 1814, the Northern Hemisphere was caught in what is known as the Little Ice Age, and there were seven major frost fairs held, with the first one recorded being held in January 1608, but another source tells me it was 1683 to 1684, which was also known as the Great Winter, and that was when the Thames ice was thick enough to set up shop, which they did in 1608 or 1683, 1684, whatever part that you want to get your stuff from. But the thing is, they set up shop, which is what some enterprising people did. There were nine-pin bowling, which were skittles, and football games, fruit sellers, barbershops, shoemakers, and of course, before long, there were pubs, England being England and Londoners being Londoners, and fires would be allowed to burn inside tents to keep the shopkeepers warm, so fire on the ice. Yeah, okay. The fairs would go for about 4 or 5 days at a time, and during the aforementioned Great Winter, the seas around southern Britain were frozen for 2 miles from the shore. It proved very popular pastime, with entire oxen being roasted, bull baiting, horse and coach racing, more pubs, of course. Who'd have thought? Ice skating, puppet plays, and food vendors being part of the entertainment and sustenance for Londoners. This was also known as the Blanket Fair. The English diarist and novelist John Evelyn wrote in the Blanket Fair, and I quote, "Coaches plied from Westminster to the Temple and from several other stairs to and fro, as in the streets, sliding with skeets," I think that means skates, "a ball baiting, horse and coach races, puppet plays and interludes, cooks tippling," I would only think that that means pub crawls, "and other lewd places, so that seemed a bacchanalian triumph or carnival on the water," end quote. He sounds like a barrel of laughs, this guy. With great fun can also come great tragedy, and as can be expected, in 1739 a whole piece of ice gave way, with people and tents falling into the freezing Thames. In 1789, melting ice at the fair caused a ship that was anchored to, yes, you heard right, to a riverside pub at Rotherhithe by an anchor that was actually taken inside the pub and placed in the cellar, and a cable was attached to a beam inside the adjacent house. When the ice melted, the ship pulled away, bringing down the house and killing 5 people in their beds. Now, I'm really hoping that the ship must have been moored there before the water truly froze. But yeah, it wasn't a good move by all involved. The largest fair on record was also the last one in 1814, and this was the one where the elephant featured. So you get the picture of this elephant walking across the ice on the Thames. So I think that's pretty full on and interesting. Food and drink was the main draw card in this one, and yes, as Londoners do, more pubs with raucous bawdy behaviour going on. Now, it sounds like my kind of place. And there were fiddlers, warm apple cellars, gingerbread and warm gin. But as with all good things, they must come to an end, and with the end of the Little Ice Age came the end of the frost fairs. Now, question, where did I leave my TARDIS? Because I would really love to go to one of these things. Yay, another Whovian reference. Yay, me! I'd love to go. It sounded like absolute fun. And, yeah, everyone was there. It was nothing strange to go down the Thames and do ice skating and cross the Thames.
Yeah, I think I'd want to go at the start of the frost fairs when the cold snap has only just hit. Just because the longer it goes for, I guess the more likely it is for something to go a bit dumb.
Yeah, a bit pear-shaped. Yeah, they were saying most of it was done near London Bridge, the old London Bridge before it got sold to the Americans, and Blackfriars. So that was the main part of where it all happened. And in 1963, that was the last time that the Thames froze, but they didn't do a frost fair, which I thought was a bit strange, because I looked into that as well and go, yeah, why was that last frost fair the very last one?
Maybe they knew about public liability insurance by then.
They probably did.
And they couldn't afford the premiums.
Oh, snap. Yes. Of course.
Just a theory.
Just a theory. I just thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, everyone was there.
Damn this being responsible stuff. Anyway.
Oh, but very true. But we hear what the history really implore people to be responsible and safe.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
You might have a laugh about it, but please be safe, people.
Please be safe.
Anyway, from one icy escapade to another. Not that we get much ice where we are, but that's another story.
Breaks my heart.
Anyone who lives in an area with regular noise, adjusting is largely a way of life.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be near a busy road, you probably just heard something go past then.
Yes.
a train line or more natural things like a beach or even, say, a waterfall, often the steady acoustic interference becomes background noise, barely noticed, except for when it gets exceptionally noisy or stops completely.
You sound very ominous there.
Mm.
Okay.
You see, on March 30 in 1848, a farmer named Jed Porter was out for a midnight stroll in the Niagara Falls Park area, up on the border of the USA and Canada, and he noticed how quiet things were, unnaturally quiet. Normally the roar of the famous waterfall would be heard through the area, but it was strangely absent. Jed proceeded to investigate, and that's how he became the first to discover the falls that normally have over 500,000 litres of water go over them per second had become a trickle. Essentially, the falls had run dry, which I'm sure gave Jed a bit of a what the experience. He didn't need to spread the news. As people woke up that morning, it was obvious something pretty major had gone down. As the falls were already a tourist attraction, there were established villages on both the American and Canadian sides, as well as a number of mills and factories that made use of the rushing water to turn water wheels to power machinery. The Buffalo News reported at the time, quote, "The Falls of Niagara can be compared to nothing but a mere mill dam this morning. In the memory of the oldest inhabitants, never was there so little water running over Niagara's awful precipice." Ooh. "As at this moment. Hundreds of people are now witnessing that which never has, and probably never may again be witnessed, on the Niagara River." End quote. Old Tommy talk.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. The awful precipice.
The awful precipice.
Charming.
As people went to investigate, they saw turtles and fish struggling. Some even went out and retrieved long-lost artifacts from the now-dry riverbed. Items such as arrowheads, muskets, and bayonets from the War of 1812.
It's a history lesson for them. Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
I hope they saved the fish and the turtles.
I think they may have saved them for the cooking pot. Anyway. Others saw it as a chance to cash in. The mills may have stopped, but the lack of water presented other opportunities. One enterprising group took a logging cart and removed previously inaccessible pine timber from the riverbed near Three Sisters Island. The operators of the Maid of the Mist, a tourist boat, decided to do something about boulders that normally made navigation near the falls dangerous and proceeded to remove them with dynamite. And word was spreading. Hundreds of sightseers descended upon the area, lining the riverbanks and just staring at the strange phenomenon. The U.S. Cavalry even got in on the action, riding horses up and down the riverbed in the military display.
Sorry. Oh, everyone's out to make a buck on this, aren't they?
Yeah, well, the day drew on, and the novelty began to fade. Curiosity was replaced with a much greater concern. Why exactly had the fall stopped? It did not take long for many to think it was a sign, and not a good one. Whispers started, and then open talk, until people were seeing the river drying up as a sign of impending doom. As the dry spell continued into March 31st, thousands attended special religious services, praying for salvation and the return of the water. But what had caused this very unusual occurrence? Eventually, word came from the city of Buffalo that strong winds further upstream had pushed large chunks of ice across the Niagara River's source in Lake Erie in Ontario, Canada, effectively damming the river and stopping the flow. And not long after, around nightfall on March 31st, after the wind had changed direction, the ice was sufficiently weakened to allow the impromptu dam to burst, sending a wall of water downstream and restarting the falls in short order. There are no reports if anyone was still on the riverbed at the time.
Oh, God, can you just imagine that?
If they were, they ran.
Oh, gosh.
This amazing spectacle was considered a once-in-a-lifetime event, particularly once engineers constructed an ice boom in Lake Erie to ensure it never happened again. However, it was deliberately stopped in 1969 by Army engineers to clear debris from rock slides that threatened to have a major impact on the falls and the river. At least people had advance warning that time, but I'm sure even then the sight of the falls stopping would have made many say, what the history.
Mm-hmm. That is amazing.
Yeah, just
oh, poor little people praying for salvation. Yeah, it was pretty, like, yeah, Armageddon coming with the Niagara River, the that.
Yeah, yeah, well, you got to think that, like, the thing has been going, like, non-stop for their entire lives and suddenly nothing. It'd be like, yep, yeah. I can't really imagine.
That's what ice can do. You can do lots of things with ice.
You can
hold frost bears on ice and make lots of money and have lots of fun. And
you can dam a river make your drink nice and cool. Thank you for the end song. And on that cooling note, thank you for listening to What the History. Now, if you want to know anything more about what we talked about, we have references down in the podcast description.
We do, because we're just scholars. Down
below. Yes,
we're scholarly scholars.
We are. We're the What the Historians. And of course, you can go to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, to check out all our previous episodes. Definitely a lot of fun little facts in amongst all that. You can also get in touch with us through Facebook, through the What the History Podcast Facebook page, or finding pod_what on Twitter, or sending us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com, or of course head to our homepage and leave a comment there. We'd love to hear from you.
We would. We'd love to hear from anyone. Anyone and everyone. Bring it on.
So, yeah.
Yay!
We've had people approach us directly, but, hey, leave comments. It helps us be found on Google.
Yes. Oh, we love our people. Leave messages anywhere.
But yes,
I'll get them.
But the more you interact with our stuff, the easier it is for the people to find it. Oh, and don't forget to use the hashtag WTHpod as well, because that seems to work. And I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say, what the history?
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Yo, man, let's get out of here. Word to your mother.
Ice, ice, baby.